Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio. You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Maggie Gilmore, librarian with the DC Public Library. On today's DCPL Presents, we are joined by several guests in the studio. We have with us Director of Special Productions and Initiatives at Washington Performing Arts, Nick Brown.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for having us.
We've got Wavelength Winds members, Natalie Groom.
Hello.
Derek Masloff.
Hello, hello.
TJ Weibel.
Hello.
And Lydia Consilvio.
Hi.
We also have Lupita Aquino of Lupita Reads.
Hi.
Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Lupita hosts the Immigration Book Discussion Series in partnership with Washington Performing Arts, which it will be visiting the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood Library on Tuesday, April 30th at 7 o'clock p.m. It's the second discussion in a series of three, and we're going to talk more with Lupita about the book selections and the origin of this discussion series later in this segment. Right now, I'd like to turn our attention to Wavelength Winds, who are joining us to promote this week's concert for the Chamber Music at Noon series. It's a lunchtime program that has been hosted by the DC Public Library for the past 17 years, since 2002, at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library. It is curated by Vasily Popov and Ralitza Pacheva, and this week, Washington Performing Arts is staging a takeover, presenting Wavelength Winds with guests Rita Sloan on piano and Kevin Hertline on bass trombone. That's going to be a great concert. Are you guys excited?
Oh, yeah, we're excited. You know, we've never performed with the bass trombone before, so it's a first for us, too.
Oh, really? And they will be at the Goethe Institute, Washington, where we have moved this concert series while the MLK Library undergoes modernization. So that's this Thursday, April 4th at 12 o'clock p.m. So why don't you tell us about Wavelength Winds? What is this ensemble? Who else is in the group who's not in the studio with us today?
Yeah, so thanks, Maggie. So Wavelength Winds is a wind quintet. So that's flute, oboe, clarinet, horn, and bassoon. My name is Derek Masloff. I'm the horn player. And in the studio, to my right, is Natalie Groom. She's our clarinetist. Lydia Consilvio is our oboist. And TJ Weibel is our flautist. And not with us today in the studio is Jimmy Wren, our bassoonist. So Wavelength Winds is the current graduate fellowship wind quintet at the University of Maryland. This group got together about 2 years ago. We all auditioned separately to be a part of this fellowship. So we got tossed together and decided we were going to be Wavelength Winds. We're actually coming to the end of our tenure now. We'll graduate in May. And yeah, we have been working almost every single day as a chamber group in residence at the University of Maryland. So we put on a variety of different kinds of programs, some more classical, some less classical. The program we'll be presenting on Thursday is reasonably classical. We've had a lot of fun experiences getting to learn how to play with each other, and we've had a lot of great collaborations. And yeah, that's a little bit about us.
Well, instead of talking about you, why don't we listen to you? We have a recording here queued up of a piece that is by composer Danielle McBrien, The Prick of the Spindle. It is a Sleeping Beauty story.
Thank you.
And that's just a taste for you of The Prick of the Spindle. Talk to us about this piece.
Absolutely. This piece was one that we, Wavelength Winds, commissioned from one of my friends, Danielle McBrien. I met her several years ago at a summer music festival that I attended, and right now she's living in Germany on a Fulbright scholarship. She's a virtuoso oboist and obviously also a composer. I reconnected with her a couple years after we met because she has a project called Avant Projects, in which they create what I would call classical music videos, and they share them for free on social media, and that's their avenue of distribution, a way to get classical performing arts in a more relevant cultural space, and that is the digital concert stage. This piece is based on the tale of Sleeping Beauty. So we heard about halfway through the piece, but it starts with Sleeping Beauty walking around, and the witch is following her, and Sleeping Beauty is seduced by the power of the witch. She pricks her finger, and she falls under the witch's spell, into this deep sleep. She wakes up in the sleep, and she's in this dreamlike state. She can't figure out where she is, and it's not until she's awoken by true love's kiss that the spell is broken. Where we started the clip is where she and Prince Desire are walking around the town. They're in love. They're preparing for their wedding. But through her life, Aurora is still haunted by the spell of the witch. And so when we get to the fast, angsty, dissonant sections, that's where you hear the witch coming back into her life, and that trauma is still there. And she battles it. And of course, eventually at the end of the piece, she overcomes the witch, and they get married and live happily ever after.
So we're told. And what was that like working with a composer on a commission? Is this something that you've done before? Do you have input on how the piece turns out?
You know, it kind of depends. There's a lot of different ways to approach commissioning a work from a composer. In this case, it was one of my friends, so we had a little bit of input there. We definitely agreed on the concept that we wanted to do, the story of Sleeping Beauty. We spent a lot of time talking about what our music video would be, and from there, it was really her complete free reign to do what she wanted with the music. You know, she had talked to us a little bit about her influences, such as Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty. After the piece was written, when we were in rehearsals, and then eventually when we did our studio recording, we would Skype in with Danielle because she's still living in Germany, and that was a bit of a challenge, but we were still able to get feedback directly from the mouth of the composer and also try some ideas. She's very open to feedback, to ideas from the ensemble, changing a few things here and there. We might make suggestions based on our instruments of, oh, maybe this articulation would work better. What if we did something musically here? What do you think of that? She's very open to that, and so we had a very interactive and collaborative experience in that way. We actually commissioned 4 pieces last year, so this was one of them, and we expanded the project by recording the video component of it in our classical music video.
And can the public see that video? Has it been
published? Yeah, absolutely. So we released it in December. It's available right on the homepage of our website, www.wavelengthwinds.com. It's also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wavelengthwinds. So it's all available there. And also, if you want to see Avant Projects videos, they spell their name AVANT space PROJEKTS. And you can see their other classical music videos there.
Excellent. So let's turn to Nick Brown over here with Washington Performing Arts. What is your role in this and bringing Wavelength Winds to the public?
Yes, definitely. Thanks for having us again. So in my role at Washington Performing Arts, I curate an initiative called the Mars Urban Arts Initiative, which is our signature community engagement program. And we really focus on DC-based artists and performers, whether they're students or professionals or amateur adults even. And we really seek to create relationships with both institutional partners like DC Public Library or really awesome venues like The Line, who we partner with as well, to create opportunities for the local music and performing arts community to do their thing in the way that they would like. So that might mean one night we have live art and a couple bands at DuPont Underground, like we had a few weeks ago when we featured artists from Southeast DC. In another instance, it might be like we had this past Sunday here at The Line, which was a pop-up concert by amazing jazz singer Veronica Swift, along with members of the U.S. Air Force Band's Airmen of Note. And they did a really amazing concert, which I encourage you all to check out on the Full Service Radio website. The full recording is up there. So we really look to connect with artists, develop relationships longer term to figure out ways that we can support them and ways that we can enrich our community with their music making or their creativity. Mm-hmm. So Wavelength Winds is connected with us in a unique way because Natalie is actually a member of our junior board, which is a really exciting project that we have to cultivate the philanthropic leaders of tomorrow, basically. And they get to learn all about nonprofit governance, about fundraising and philanthropy, and things like how to allocate funds for education programs and that kind of thing. And they're also kind of our incubator for funky, fun programming. And we got to work with the junior board specifically and also Wavelength Winds to present their project called Classically Dope, which features an amazing hip-hop artist whose name is Conscience the MC. And we presented that at Republic Restoratives as part of our Music Distilled series in Northeast, which is a really fun event. We paired the performance with amazing cocktails, of course, but also a food demonstration by Chef Lauren Vanderpool, who's an amazing celebrity chef based here in D.C., who has worked with Serena and Venus Williams and Common and all kinds of amazing folks. So we really seek to create these moments of community togetherness through a wide range of genres of music that are represented and other art forms as well. And Wavelength has had this amazing project for a while now with Conscience, and we're excited to see it as it continues to grow and evolve, and happy to play a part in supporting that work.
I look forward to catching one of those performances in the future. What is it like for you all, Wavelength members, to be performing in some of these alternative venues at... You know, we have the Lion Hotel, we have libraries, we have a bar or a distillery anyway. Any favorite venues?
I would say for me, definitely the recent performance that we did at Republic Restoratives was just such a great event. You know, so many different things came together. And as Nick was saying before, just like, creating that sense of community in that moment. You know, there was great music, there was great food, we had great drinks. And then also just having the chance to kind of hang out and interact with, you know, the people that were attending our concert. It was something new for me, especially like I was coming from New York before I moved here and I played in an orchestra. So most of my performing was done on a stage. Little interaction with, you know, the people that were attending the concert. So yeah, that event was definitely a highlight of the season for me. Trying to think of some other things that we've done.
What was the audience reaction? What was the audience makeup at Republic Restoratives? And what was their reaction to classical music in the afternoon paired with this event?
Yeah, well, our Classically Dope series is always a really unique combination of people coming together. So for that event, there were a lot of young people, some older people. And in that series, we kind of fused together the hip-hop with the classical quintet. And I think people are always a little bit surprised by how well it works together.
Do you choose specific works to perform with the hip hop artists, or do you improv as a part of that, or how does that work?
So it's a little of a mixture of those things, actually. Derek, our horn player, is actually an amazing pianist and composer. So he's written several of the pieces that we do with Conscience, and the process is really unique. You know, Conscience will contact Derek and say, you know, I have these lyrics or I have this poem. So then they get together and Derek just kind of plays around on the piano a little bit and then they try to find a way to set that to music. So we've, you know, come up with some really great things that way. Natalie, the clarinetist in our group, also just took one of our really standard pieces, a woodwind quintet by Carl Nielsen. One of the most standard pieces in the quintet repertoire. So she kind of figured out a way to piece it together and intertwine it with some of Conscience lyrics. So we kind of have like this reinvention of the Nielsen Woodwind Quintet, which I think is really cool.
We also had a really cool guest singer join Conscience. His name is Rayshon Lamar. He's a local soul and R&B singer who was actually a finalist on The Voice. And so it was just this amazing confluence of these very different creative minds in DC coming together and making a very unified, awesome, powerful experience where folks who might be classical music fans could be exposed to hip-hop and soul music in a way that they would never possibly ever get in any other context, because it's just this amazing confluence of creativity that happens with this particular group and project.
That sounds really awesome. And Nick, I'm going to turn a little bit into the librarian profession world. Ooh. And ask you about your career. And I know you were formerly at Library of Congress, working on concert presentations at the Coolidge Auditorium. And how did you end up in this role from a library background?
Yeah, so I actually came to libraries from the music side. I grew up as a horn player and played in one of the army bands in Massachusetts while I was in school, studied musicology in grad school, landed this amazing opportunity at the Library of Congress to be one of the programmers of their concert series, and fell in love with the world of libraries. I'd done performance librarianship before for ensembles and done some archival internships, but this was really the high level opportunity to showcase collections through live art, basically. And it was an amazing time there. And one of the things that I came to love about librarianship and working in a library was the fact that creating open opportunities for communities to gather is one of the primary reasons why libraries exist. And then you offer up the resources in ways that different people can engage with them, whether it's through listening to a concert live or seeing the music manuscripts by Beethoven in the lobby beforehand or attending a pre-concert talk. So I've been fortunate to be able to take this next step for my own career with jumping over to Washington Performing Arts, which was a longtime partner of the Library of Congress. And actually, Patrick Hayes, who is our founder at Washington Performing Arts, his papers reside at the Library of Congress, so it's a nice kind of confluence. So in this role at Washington Performing Arts, my focus is really on creating multidisciplinary opportunities to get the music out beyond just the niche music audience. When we do a concert at The Line, for example, we have people who walk through the concert experience who would never go to that concert intentionally on their own, but when they walk in the door and they witness it, they stand here and sometimes they dance, like we had a couple weeks ago with a Brazilian artist, Sissa Paz. So it's really grassroots work that is seeking to draw people into the amazing community of artists that live here in D.C.
And speaking of careers...
Yes. So I have a question for Wavelength Winds and also for Lupita. I think one of the things that we all realize, being the age that we are in D.C. and at this time in the city's history, is that we all have multiple hats in our lives. And especially in the music world, we might be performing or arranging or producing or teaching. Could you all maybe speak a bit about how your lives have different areas of focus in addition to the main kind of performance work that you do? And also for Lupita, you're an amazing bookstagrammer and literary maven in D.C., but you also have another career as well. So if anyone wants to jump in, please.
Yeah, well, in addition to classical oboe playing, I'm also a singer-songwriter, and my compositions explore elements of minimalism, jazz, classical, bluegrass, and pop. And a distinct feature of my music is the use of oboe and English horn as an underlying texture in the sound. So I sort of have that overlap there.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I'm sort of dividing my time three ways right now. I guess the first is focusing on playing the horn, trying to play relatively in tune for our performances, always an ongoing struggle. And then the second is probably arranging, composing some music for our classically dope project. And then the third thing that I do is I work as an administrator for the National Youth Orchestra of China. So NYO China. I did my undergrad in U.S.-China relations and China studies. So yeah, we're putting together a tour of Europe this summer. It'll be NYO China's first European tour. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be in Berlin, Italy, and the U.K. So that'll be in August. But we're working right now to just put everything together, get all the students in, get the visas, all that other kind of stuff have to do behind the scenes.
TJ's coming on mic here.
So for me, a majority of my time is actually spent with these guys. We do about 3 hours of rehearsal every day. And then I also do a ton of teaching. I teach at a couple of schools in the DC area. I have about 10 private flute students that I teach. And I also teach a couple of courses at the University of Maryland. So, yeah, since I've arrived here, my life has mostly been quintet, teaching, and, you know, just gigging and performing on the side.
Cool.
This is Natalie. Part of what I do for our ensemble specifically that's outside of just the performing element is kind of the administrative tasks. So maybe helping with our social media, booking gigs, concerts, being our point of contact for all of that. And some of that comes from my previous degree, which in between my master's in music and my doctorate of music, which I'm pursuing right now, I did an MBA at the University of Arizona. With an emphasis in MIS. I was in market research and data analytics for a while, and a lot of what I did then and what I still am doing now, even as a business consultant working here in the area, is finding ways to take data and apply it in the classical performing arts context so that hopefully we can connect a data-driven approach to programming so that we're engaging audiences in a fuller way and that we're redefining what the status quo of classical music is. It's, I feel like where we are right now is in a general sense is not going to be sustainable. We live in D.C. I'm enjoying living in a thriving arts community, but that's not how it is maybe in 90% of the United States, and I'm from rural Arkansas, and there's not a lot of programming available in the schools that I've gone to, other places I've lived. It's not the burgeoning art scene that you see here. So I want to look at how we can use data to make those programming decisions and bring people into our classical performing arts circle. Because unless you're the Kennedy Center or the Met or some huge organization, you just don't have the time, money and resources to get that information. So how can we do that and apply it to small nonprofits or apply it to universities or churches or whoever wants to build greater community through the arts?
It sounds a lot like the work that is done in libraries in terms of patron-driven acquisition and identifying what your community actually needs in order to provide and enhance and evolve your services, which is fun.
Yeah, you have to listen to the user and then really cater your services and programming around that rather than the other way around sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Lupita.
Yes.
Hi.
And as Nick mentioned, the way that we know each other is through Instagram Bookstagram, where I talk a lot about books. But outside of that, I am a clinical research professional. So I usually say I'm a clinical research professional by day, working for the National Institutes of Health, which is completely separate from what I do online. But it's in the same realm.
Very cool. Check out Lupita's Instagram. It's amazing. It's such a happy, uplifting place. And there are like baby pictures and live streams now. It's amazing.
And it's at Lupita Reads, or is there an underscore in there?
It's Lupita.reads.
Lupita.reads. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Can I ask you a question, Maggie?
Certainly.
What are some of the resources that DCPL offers for experiencing music, whether it's listening to music or watching documentaries or getting sheet music out of the library?
How much time do we have left here in this episode?
Hours and hours.
Don't get me started. Yes, we have some great resources, actually, that you can access with your DC Public Library card. DCLibrary.org, there is a tab for research where you will find a link for our databases, and you can filter that page by subject, and in this case, you would filter by music. We subscribe to the Alexander Street database series or set, and that gives you access to Smithsonian Global Sound. We have the African American Music Research database that are like textbooks and encyclopedia entries and all kinds of great informational resources. We have the Jazz Music Library, the Classical Music Library, opera in video, so you can actually watch opera, you can listen to jazz, you can listen to classical. We also have the Classical Scores Library, so these are digital scores that Alexander Street has acquired the rights to host. And so you can go browse through and see some of that if you're interested in playing some music of your own. The Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library is going through modernization until 2020. And at our central location, we have had a wonderful music score collection. We've got about 20,000 items in the collection, some of that being chamber music that people in town can check out. Sets of parts if you are interested in starting up a chamber group of your own. You're so inspired from this episode, although you won't have access to that until 2020. But we will again have a wonderful score collection when we reopen our central library. We do have some print material at the Shepherd Park Neighborhood Library up on Georgia Avenue. There are great instructional scores if you want to learn how to play the guitar, the ukulele, piano scores, vocal scores, some of that is available. Awesome. Speaking of our neighborhood libraries, Lupita, you will be joining us at the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood Library for our book discussion on April 30th. We're going to be talking about The Line Becomes a River, Dispatches from the Border by Francisco Cantu. Talk to us about this book discussion series. What are the three books for the three different events? I know one already happened.
Yeah, of course. And I'm really excited. I hope anyone that's willing and can joins us. It's the what we've titled the Immigrant Book Discussion Series. And it's three different parts. And I think Nick will talk more about the Dreamers Project and how it inspired this this book discussion series. And essentially what it's done, I think, for me and I think for anyone is it's kind of opened the gates to for an opportunity to discuss immigration, you know, on different levels. And the books themselves just vary in spectrum on the topic of immigration. You know, with our first book, we were introduced to a Mexican-American family. And I think we read The House of Broken Angels. And so I think that story really did a great job of kind of illustrating, you know, what being American means, and not just, you know, going from saying Americans to not Mexican Americans, like everyone's American, you know. So and then the next one we have up, The Line Becomes a River, by Francis Cantu, I think will be a very interesting discussion of what it means to be a Latinx placed in a position of power over other Latinx. And especially at the border, because he's a part of ICE. And the third book is Across 100 Mountains by Reina Grande. And essentially, like I said before, I think all of these books do a really great job of opening the gates for discussions. And I think me personally as an immigrant, it's the biggest thing I feared was talking about being an immigrant. And I think reading about it and being able to kind of discuss that with others and you know, maybe connect on their experiences or them hearing my experiences, which is what we've done with the first discussion. I think we did a really great job of doing that. And I feel like that's kind of the power of books. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Definitely. Yeah, so we really appreciate DC Public Libraries partnering with us on the series and also Politics and Prose and Solid State Books. So we're hitting different venues throughout the city for all three of these book discussions. And they're part of a larger project that Washington Performing Arts has this season focused on the notion of dreamers and then also Latinx immigrant identities here in DC. We commissioned a new work that was premiered on March 17th, called Dreamers, by composer Jimmy Lopez, who's a Peruvian American who actually just became a citizen officially after being on different visa statuses. He did his PhD in composition at UC Berkeley, studied in Finland and in Peru, and he's an amazing, 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 powerful voice on the American music scene right now. And the work had a libretto by Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Nilo Cruz, who is a Cuban American who came here, I think, when he was 8 as a refugee. And they came together because they wanted to do a work that honored Berkeley's history as a sanctuary city. And then they came upon the topic of immigration as the kind of pressing societal discussion happening now that could bring relevancy to their work. So they created an oratorio, which is a work for orchestra, choir, and soloists. And it was performed by the Philharmonia Orchestra of London under the baton of Esa-Pekka Salonen, who is an amazing Finnish composer and conductor who was just announced as taking over the San Francisco Symphony after Michael Tilson Thomas departs his music directorship. So the work has, over the course of this year in various cities, including at Stanford University in Berkeley, at University of Michigan, and here in D.C., created a whole series of events around Latinx immigrant identities. And yes, we looked at dreamers, and actual dreamer students' interviews became the basis of the libretto of the oratorio. But we realized that you can't talk about dreamers and not talk about the entire picture, because status is so different within immigrant families. And one of the things we learned from that first book in the discussion series, within a family of multiple generations, or even in the same generation, you can have upwards of four or five different immigration statuses, even if you all came from the same place.
Right.
So you could be dreamer, you could have TPS, which is a temporary protection status, you could be a refugee, you could have come on a business or tourist visa and overstayed. So there's a complex picture that informs how people have to live when they're an immigrant, especially in the Latinx community. And D.C. is, of course, a sanctuary city as well. And we have an amazing Latinx community. The Salvadoran community has the largest platform within that. So I'll wave my little Honduran flag because I'm half Honduran. And Lupita's Mexican as well.
Yeah, so I'll wave my Mexican flag.
Yeah. And I think one of the amazing things that's come out of all of the events in this series, whether they were at the Embassy of Peru, where we had a discussion about the arts and immigrant stories. We've had events at the Kennedy Center, one of which also featured Wavelength Winds. It was called Voices of Change, where we featured some immigrant students who were doing spoken word about their experiences, which was really powerful. They were from our partners at Gala Hispanic Theater and Carlos Rosario International Public Charter School as well. But it's been a really amazing way to mobilize a discussion around the topic of immigration without it being an antagonistic political conversation. And for us at Washington Performing Arts, the way to do that is by bringing the art to the forefront and creating spaces to experience the stories through the art, but also then realizing that we can't just take something on through the arts and not give it some context. So having a book discussion series where we can get folks in to think about the same topics through different voices and through their own experience is really important. We've had a policy panel discussion at NYU DC, which is really powerful and important. And the day that we had that policy discussion was actually the day that the new Congress introduced the DREAM Act, basically, again, in a new form. So that's like something that's happens only every few years, and it's a very critical juncture in the overall arc of immigration policy evolving through time. So we're really appreciative of the village that has amassed around this project. We have 19 partners in the city and also some international partners within that. And it's been a really amazing journey for us as an organization to reconnect with the amazing Latinx community here in D.C.
And Lupita, when did you begin Lupita Reads as a personality in your Instagram? You're obviously an avid reader.
Yeah, I would call myself a book lover, book enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
And it really all started as a way for me to kind of keep track of what I'm reading and also to recommend books to family and friends without realizing that there's like a large platform on Instagram. There's millions, billions of accounts that all dedicated to recommending books. And so coming into that community and kind of connecting with people about books, it's just been a different experience than what reading is sometimes, which is solitary, you know? So that's been really great. And that's how it started. And now it's evolved into an in-person book club that I co-run with another bookstagrammer, as well as being in conversation with authors here and there. So it's really evolved from what it initially initially began. But it's a passion project, and I love to highlight as many women of color that write, because there's a lot of issues with that in the publishing industry that as a reader I didn't know before. As a Latina, I was fully aware, because it was hard to find books that, you know, were super marketed about the Latinx experience and Latinas in general. So it's been really eye-opening to have started something on Instagram to become so much bigger. So,
and all three of the books in the Immigration Book Discussion Series are available for checkout through our catalog at dclibrary.org. If you search our website for Lupita Reads, you will find the event page, and there are links to each of the titles there on that page. Also, follow Lupita.reads on Instagram.
Lupita, did you get your mom onto Bookstagram too? Or was it your wife's mom?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. She should be on.
Yes, she should.
And again, the discussion we are hosting at DC Public Library is happening on Tuesday, April 30th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood Library. That's at 16th and Lamont Street Northwest. And the following discussion happens May 7th at Solid State Books, and they will be talking about Across 100 Mountains by Rena Grande. Anyone else want to chime in on their favorite read as of recent from our classical music ensemble over here, Wavelength Winds? What have you all been reading lately? Do you have time to read?
Well, there is, I've been reading The Letters to a Young Poet by Rainer Rilke, and that's been really good. Speaking of solitude, mm-hmm. it's been really helpful as a young artist to, you know, read this advice given to a young poet. And it's especially good for me as a lyricist, and I like to write poems too, but even in the music world and the arts world, I find that book to be quite inspiring.
Yeah, Lupita, I love that you've drawn this distinction between the solitary act of reading and how we share our reading in our books. And in libraries, you know, we are redefining ourselves also as a place for discussion and being able to communicate with each other, not only about what we are reading, but the issues that are facing us within our communities. I love that comparison you made there. Anybody else? Hot titles on the shelf?
I've got a hot title.
I know, which I've got a hot title too. Yeah. I've got a bunch.
And I think he's a local author, right? Louis Bayard?
Louis Bayard.
Yes. And his new book is called Courting Mr. Lincoln, and it's a historical fiction account of Lincoln's courtship with Mary Todd, and then also his friendship, or perhaps more than that, with a gentleman named Joshua Speed, who kind of was his best friend and helped him come into his own as a politician and as a public figure. And it's a fascinating read, and of course there are always Lincoln books and lots of fictional accounts of Lincoln's life, but it's nice to read about Lincoln in a younger part of his life rather than as the president or running for president.
And speaking of local authors, the DC Author Fest that the DC Public Library hosts is happening at the Library of Congress on Saturday, April 27th. So that's a great opportunity to go meet local authors and interact. There are workshops and panel discussions. It's free and open to the public.
I mean, I'd love to give a shout out to Miriam Jacobs' Good Talk, A Memoir on Conversations. It's a beautiful graphic novel, and it's essentially her telling us about hard conversations she's had with her family about race, identity. She has a son that's half Jewish, half Indian, and it's just, it's beautiful. So I feel like if anybody can, pick it up.
Excellent. So again, today we've been talking with Nick Brown at Washington Performing Arts, who are presenting both music and literature at the DC Public Library. This Thursday, April 4th, we will host Wavelength Winds at the Goethe Institute, Washington at 1990 K Street, although enter on 20th, secret tip, and that starts at 12 p.m. So this has been an episode of DC Public Library Presents on Full Service Radio, broadcast live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Maggie. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Wavelength Winds members.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you, Lupita.
Thank you for having me.
Visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library's services and programs. Talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. Listen and download this show wherever you listen to your podcasts by searching for Full Service Radio. On next week's All Things Creative episode, Molly will be talking about cosplay right here on Full Service Radio. Thank you for listening, and we are going to leave with the last segment of The Prick of the Spindle, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.